So the wisdom is the first thing. The next thing is the UDDI. Now, the UDDI, just so you guys know, was created, the naming of it was done by a whole bunch of nerds that got together and said, let's create a technology that has at least 87 syllables in the name, and we'll throw off it. I mean, come on, the Universal Description Definition Integration Specification. You can't tell me they weren't giggling on some type of drug when they came up with that. We call it UDDI, right? This, I'm sorry? Well, how would you say that? UDDI? UDDI. UDDI. Oh, I don't know. This is the UDDI and the other one's the WISDL. Why do you say SSL but dub dub dub? Right? So the UDDI, think of it as a phone book, right? This is what's going to tell you what web services are available and then tell you where the WISDL is. How do you query the UDDI? Oh, yeah, it's a web service itself. You use SOAP requests, right? And you basically say to it, hey, what's out there? Now, there are public ones. They're not as common. You'll see, you know, UDDI.microsoft.com, UDDI.ibm.com, and they'll go out and give you a list of the things that are going on. But more often, we find private UDDI services. As a matter of fact, in almost every case where I found a UDDI service on an internal network, it was a surprise to my client because it was deployed as part of the container without them realizing it. As they published stuff to this container, the UDDI service was populated and they did not realize it. We found it, said, hey, look at this, this is kind of cool, right? So the UDDI is something that we're going to want to look at. And then we have SOAP. The Simple Object Access Protocol. SOAP is the protocol, but it requires an encapsulating protocol. So SOAP over HTTP, SOAP over MQ, SOAP over Avian Carrier. You guys know about the Avian Carrier protocol, right? Homing pigeons. It was actually an RFC that was released on April Fool's Day, but has been implemented multiple times, including quality of service, right? So you have carrier pigeons, you strap a packet to their leg, you let it go, it flies. The other end, they get it, they read in the packet, they write like a SYN, SYNAC, ACK, right? The problem is it's very high latency and the hawk collision rate is messy. But SOAP can go over any of these protocols, right? I've seen SOAP messages delivered via FTP. I've seen SOAP messages via email. I've seen SOAP messages via calculator. Okay, I made up that last one. But we need to start looking at these, right? And the SOAP message itself is where we're going to look at our attacks. The pieces of the SOAP message, there's three of them by default, right? We've got the envelope, which is what addresses the menu. Can you tell I'm hungry? It addresses the message. The food's right there. The header, which is optional. And when you start looking at things like WS security, things that are built into the protocol to try to secure it, they'll go into the header, right? And then the body. That's the actual message. If you find authentication credentials in the body, more than likely it's using the application to authenticate you. So think about that as you look at attacks, right? That's actually very common, where I have an application, it's a web service. A lot of times it's an application that we turned into a web service or we added a web service to it. Well, it already had usernames and passwords, so they implemented those, and then they just said, okay, well, in the body of your message, put the username and password here, right? That's it. There is a SOAP message in the news that is available to you to see, okay? Various attacks. All of the attacks we talk about with web applications are visible and available to us by the web service. We can do SQL injection. We do command injection. We can do cross-site scripting, but keep in mind that cross-site scripting inside of a web service is slightly different. Why? Because we're usually not browsing to it via a web browser. We have another application that is connecting to it, right? Another, like an agent. And so what we typically find is that web services become the cross-site scripting delivery mechanism, right? Now, for example, I had a guy call me. One of the things I found at being an instructor, and I say this, I'll tell you guys this many times this week, feel free afterwards, reach out to me, ask for help. I enjoy talking to students into the future. I like hearing what you're doing. I like hearing what you accomplish, right? Like if you passed your GWAP cert, let me know, right? I'm happy to hear it. So I had this guy call me one day. Kevin, right? Felt like Sheldon on Big Bang Theory. I didn't have to sing Soft Kitty to him though. But, like, what's going on? He's like, oh, I got a problem. I'm doing a pen test. I'm like, well, that doesn't seem to be a problem. What's the issue? Well, I found a web service, okay? I'm expecting him to say to me, I don't know how to attack it, because it's very common for people not to know how to attack web services. So, okay, what's up? He goes, well, turns out that I could deliver cross-site scripting attacks through the web service to the main production website of the client, right? It accepted data, what was then stored and delivered via the main website. And so I was able to inject cross-site scripting code. So, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. What's the issue? Well, I decided that a good attack would be to Rickroll the victims. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah. So I got the Rick Astley video, you know, the never gonna give you up. There, I Rickrolled you. But you know the video, right? And he injected it. Now here's the problem. He didn't realize this was feeding the production server. So now the external facing website for his client is Rickrolling their entire user base. Never gonna give you up, right? And he can't figure out how to delete the message. So he's like, Kevin, what do I do? I said, well, fall on that sword, right? You need to call your client up and go, look, I'm stupid. I made a mistake and I did this. Now, the worst part about it was he didn't use the Rick Astley on YouTube. He found a Russian site that had the video. I'm like, why in the world? So he used a website he didn't control. Yes, it was malware. Oops. I want to be very clear, he did not work for me. You idiot. How could you? Here, I'll just go to a random Russian website. Oh, I can't read anything on the website, but I'll use this video because it's Rick Astley. How could it be bad? Annoying. So you got to be careful with that, right? So there's also some web service specific things. We're going to talk about external entity attacks and XPath injection when we get back. But it is, Mickey says, 12:15. So we're going to stop right here, pick up at 1:30. Please do not leave your stuff because there is a luncheon. So welcome back. I hope you guys had a good lunch. I guess I should turn on the PowerPoint so it's actually running, right? So, we picked up, we left off right at web service specific attacks. We talked about external entities and XPath injection. We're gonna start with external entities. And these are interesting. Now, I want to be very clear. The two conversations we're going to have right now about a variety of attacks, these two different attacks, we're going to discuss them as if we know you're vulnerable to it. Okay? So when I say this is an attack you can do, please do not walk out of here going, oh my gosh, all web services are vulnerable to external entity attack. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if your web service is vulnerable to this attack, this is what it does. Okay? But I've actually had people call me and email me after class and gone, well, Kevin, I've got a web service and I could not get that vulnerability to exploit. And I said, well, maybe your web service isn't vulnerable to it. Well, you said, so now I'm being very clear. If your web service is vulnerable to it, this is how they work. Is that clear? Good. Now I know all of you are going to email me. Kevin, this web service is... So, external entity attacks. Before we can talk about an external entity, right, we need to talk about an internal entity. I'm just kidding. They're just regular entities. What is an entity, right? This is a topic that we talk about, but not many people understand. The idea behind an entity is it's a user-defined shortcut. Now, how did the user define it? Well, in some cases they declare it, as we'll talk about now, but in other cases, like the browser understands it, like the ampersand COPY semicolon. That's an HTML entity, right? It's an entity that your browser recognizes and it displays a little copyright symbol, okay? You didn't define that, but your browser did, right? Your browser supports that and we all understand that. So the idea is, with an entity with an XML parser, which is what, you know, SOAP-based web services use, when they see the entity, they replace it with the value that shortcut points to, like the copyright symbol instead of the at, the ampersand COPY semicolon, right? Kind of cool. Personally, anytime I see something that says user controlled, right, or user defined, in my head, I automatically translate that to attacker controlled. Because how many of your users are attackers? Most, if not all, right? How many people here have no malicious users? I had to ask, right? Like, do you have no malicious users? Yes, I have no malicious users. Look, I'll tell you right now that even my house has malicious users in it, right? Brenda's dangerous. Seriously, man, you let her browse your website, you are screwed. Little 9-year-old popping shells. It's kind of cool, right? We're going to start an in-depth instruction on Metasploit starting in a couple weeks, right? Got a teacher, you know, my goal is to have her writing buffer overflow payloads by, you know, 11. But, you know, I can't pass on a skill of fixing cars. And as you guys know from conversating with me before, we're not going to pass on any sports skills from dad, right? The whole idea of playing catch is really playing chase. Because when I throw the ball, it goes random places in the yard and she has to go find it. I'm sorry? Or trips to the ER, right? Because I hit her with it. Not meanly, just accidentally. Now that I've recorded the fact that I hit my daughter. Kind of like when I was a kid, my twin brother was playing baseball, my dad was a coach. He hit the ball, my brother looked up, hit him in the eye, right? They got to the emergency room. The doctor said to my brother, what happened? My brother said, my dad hit me with a bat. My dad got there, security took him outside. Because, you know. So, how do they work, right? Well, we set them in the request. When we send the request into the web service, that entity can reference data, right? And maybe a remote file, a local file, a URL, and the contents of that file is returned, right? So a regular entity example would be here, right? Entity ISC, ISCSquared.org. I just almost said ISCSquared.org, didn't I? Dang. Now when you see the ampersand ISC semicolon, you'll replace that with the string isc.sans.org. Same thing with portal, same thing with Google, right? Very simple process. An external entity is where we reference an external document, that remote or local file, right? We could do something. Notice the entity definition here. Here we just say entity pass system. That's the key word. That's the word that tells the XML processor, this isn't a string, this is a reference to something on the system, right? Etsy password. So it won't return the string Etsy password, it will return the contents of the Etsy password file. Make sense? We can also do something like intra-system, http://intranet/index.html. We've now proxied through your web service. The web service is returning websites from an internal server. Now, obviously, that web service has to be able to reach, the server that the web service is running on has to reach that internal server. But very simply, boom, boom, done. We're now proxying, right? That is an external entity attack. Very simple stuff. Very simple stuff, right? And actually quite commonly vulnerable. Can anybody say SharePoint? SharePoint has had multiple external entity flaws in it. So as it starts to deal with XML documents and web services and stuff like that, you can reference external entities and it'll read files from the file system, right? Now, all of the publicly known external entity attacks against SharePoint have been patched. All the publicly known ones. Have you applied the patches on every single one of the 87,000 SharePoint servers in your organization? Because I swear they reproduce. Anybody who has, it doesn't require two of them, right? Asexual, exactly. What, I couldn't remember the word, thank you. I'm like, okay, they don't require two. You know, you have one SharePoint server, next thing you know, it's like rabbits. You got four, then 27, then 86 million, right? It's just the way it works. The next, yes, sir. It's not defined in the program. Nope. So the question is, where do I do this attack? It's in your SOAP request. In the request you make to the web service, that's an XML document, right? In that XML document, you would define some entities, and then you would use the entity in your request. If they're vulnerable, the response that would come back would return the contents of the file where that entity was. On the web service, the XML processor is what deals with those entities. No. The application can be vulnerable to it, because some web services, the developer builds in their own processing of that type of stuff. But in most cases, it's because the application doesn't filter it and just hands it to the XML processor directly, right? The application needs to protect the XML processor. Same thing as the application is actually parsing the document. The application, in most web services, they accept the XML document, and then inside the application, they make the call to return the data out of that document, parsing it, right? At least most of the ones I've looked at, right? But if the XML processor grabs it first, then you need to make sure your XML processor is configured not to work with entities. Right? So that's just a configuration at that point. So we've just moved the flaw. The next thing is XPath, XPath injection. So when we talk about XML documents storing data, remember we talked about the RDBMS being the back end, the data store being the back end, but we said that we didn't need to have an RDBMS as a data store, we could use flat files. One of the common things we see is XML documents being used that way. Well, if you're using an XML document that way, there has to be a way to search it, right? XPath is one of the ways to search XML documents, right? Well, if I can search with XPath, can't I inject XPath, right? Just like I do SQL injection. So the idea behind XPath is it's a language to query XML documents. One of the things that you have to remember is it doesn't include comment capabilities. What that means is, you know when we do SQL injection, we do the tick or 1=1, semicolon, dash, dash, and the dash, dash, or the hash mark comments out the rest of that inconvenient query, right? Well, with XPath, we don't have that comment capability. So our injection has to work exactly inside the query. We'll show this in the example, right? We have to make our payload, our injection, our attack fit the XPath query the application is running. Now the fun part is that in exchange, and I swear this was the conversation when they were designing XPath, they said, for the security people, which should we give them? Right? Commenting capability or there's no concept of user privilege. If you can query the document, you can query the entire document, right? Now, in my opinion, as an attacker, I would way prefer to give up commenting capability to gain no user privilege concept, right? How many times do you get into a database through SQL injection and you find out, damn it, they limited what I have access to? That's so rude, right? You let me get into your database and then you don't let me see every, oh, it's so inconsiderate. XPath has gotten rid of that inconsideration, right? They designed it right for me. So that's XPath, XPath. Some of the basics, right? It treats XML as a tree, WAC organization, WAC groups, WAC security. The nodes of that tree are separate, right? The WAC marks, the slash marks. Splat is a wild card, but if I want to reference an attribute of an XML tag instead of a value in an XML tag, we use an at symbol. So like think of anchor tags, right? We would do at href to reference the href attribute of an anchor tag. Make sense? We can do dot and dot dot for the parent nodes. Here is an XML document. Now this is a pretty simple XML document for a phone book, right? Why not? There's very many web services out there for phone book entries. Can anybody say Cisco voice over IP? Right. So we need to have a phone book. This is an XML document for that. My recommendation is keep this page open as we flip to the next page. Okay? So I'll flip to the next slide. You guys stay on this page just for reference. So if we were going to search that, right, we would do whack whack members. And that would return all of the members in the document. Right? In this case, Tony De LaGrange and Kevin Johnson. Right? If I wanted to grab just one person, right, I could say, slash group slash security slash member name equals Tony Splat, the wild card, right? So that's going to return Tony De LaGrange. Done. We know his phone number now, 904-639-6709, right? Or if you want to be exact, 904-639-6703 is his office line. That is a query with a where clause, right? We could also say things like, give me all the phone numbers that are of an office attribute. Notice type equals office, type equals cell, right? So those are normal queries. This is what they're expecting. So let's look at this query right here, the name equals Tony Splat. If I wanted to inject in that, the assumption is that the word Tony is what you searched for. So the input from the user was Tony. Well, if instead of typing that, and of course, we have to throw Brenna into the slide, because we can, you know. Instead of typing that, type Brenna, quote, or quote, splat, quote, equals quote. Right? Now that would fit right there perfectly. So it would be name equals quote, Brenna, quote, or quote, splat, quote, equals quote, splat, quote. Make sense? See, I was flipping back and forth, so I'm trying to put it together in your mind. If we flip back and forth fast enough, you know, you can see an old lady and a princess. Yeah, the dash is a bullet point from PowerPoint, sorry. No, the whole thing is your injection. Just like it's tick or one equals one, right? That's where we have to put it. And then we can't just say, dash dash here because there's no commenting capability. So this part of the query, the tautology, right, that always true, self-evidently true statement, that has to fit, whoops, wrong way, right here, right? We've got to terminate this query correctly. Because if we just injected Brenna, quote, or one equals one, then we're going to have a splat quote at the end of the query and it's going to break. Make sense? That is XPath injection. That's the simplicity of what this is. I mean, the hard part here is making your query fit a query that you can't see. Because we can't see the query that the web service is running, right? So we have to try different payloads and test them out, right? So the question becomes, what tools can we use for this? Right? What tools are available to deal with web services? Because I'll tell you right now, it's not as simple as just firing up your browser and saying, woohoo, let's go there. Yes, sir. No. So the question is, what XPath injection is not a web service vulnerability. It's something that if you use XML files as your data store. You're right. If you use XML files as your data store, many web services use XML files either as their data store or within the processing of the web service, because the SOAP messages are coming in as XML files. As you're manipulating them and moving them around, those queries against those messages is where you can attack. Right. Inside the web service. Not necessarily. The perfect example of that is Cisco Voice over IP phones. They have an address, a phone book built into the phone, an older version of them. That phone book would make a call over to a web service. The web service would pull all the data out of the database that was related to that person's phone and store it in an XML document in memory. And then the phone could query that XML document in memory, right? That were vulnerable to XPath injection. So even though they had a database in the back end, as a matter of fact, they weren't a database, it was an LDAP server, right? So even though it was an LDAP server on the back end, they were pulling it and creating an XML document and using the XML document in processing, in memory. So they were vulnerable, right? We see the same thing with SharePoint, where SharePoint will pull data from various sources, create XML documents, use them as temporary files, and then query them, right? So we do see quite often where web services use this. It is not a web service only flaw. Just like external entities is not a web service only flaw. Anything that uses an XML processor that allows the definition of entities can be vulnerable to that, right? We just see it. I see XPath injection way more often in web services than I do in normal web applications. So that's why we group it here. Okay. So what tools can we use, right? Well, there's Python scripts. I mean, I will tell you bluntly that one of the best things I use for attacking SOAP messages is Python. We can use any HTTP tool. We can use any proxy that allows us to manipulate the request. Because burp, you pull up the SOAP message, and play around with it, right? But there are SOAP-specific tools. WebScarab, Web Service Studio, WSFuzzer, all these types of things. Let's talk about a few of these. WebScarab. In a previous version of WebScarab, because the current version, they removed this feature. Now, I'll tell you that we list this tool because I think that many people like to use WebScarab still. And on Samurai and on Backtrack, they keep around the old version of WebScarab because the newer version has dropped a ton of the feature sets. Why has it dropped a ton of the feature sets? Nobody knows, right? I will tell you that there is a very good chance in the near future that WebScarab will go away entirely, right? I just letting you know that the OWASP project board is discussing changing their interception proxy flagship tool from WebScarab to Zap. Because of the lack of progress in moving WebScarab forward, right? So there's a good chance it's just going to just go away. That's not happened yet. This tool works very well if you're using WebScarab as an interception proxy. It will actually give you a web service tab. And if you found a WSDL, my use case here is that if you're using WebScarab to proxy and you find a WSDL, it gives you the ability to automatically pull that WSDL apart and populate a request form, right? Here is the request, fill in all the pieces you want, and manually test this web service, right? WebScarab does not have any real good web service automated attacks. It is solely used as a client at that point, okay? So, like I said, I would not fire up WebScarab specifically for attacking a web service if you hadn't been using WebScarab already when you found the web service. Make sense? But if you found a web service while doing other testing, WebScarab has this functionality built in, right? Which is kind of nice. Web Service Studio, on the other hand, is actually a tool that I would use to test it. Now, it is a development tool. It is an open source tool from, drum roll please, Microsoft. I said open source, and you're absolutely right. That's what you heard. Open source and Microsoft are the same point. Man, this is just crazy, right? Now, I will warn you right now. They're CodePlex.com, which is the Microsoft open source world, right? There is a project for Web Service Studio that has a download attached to it. That project is marked as a dead project. There is a project that has no downloads attached to it and is marked as an active project, right? So one of them is called Web Service Studio and one's called Web Service Studio Pro, if I remember correctly. They are the exact same project. I've actually contacted people I know at Microsoft. They're not real clear. The guys I talked to, and this is what they told me, so I'm repeating, right? But they're not real clear why, for some reason, the display is showing two different projects, and one is active, one is dead, and the download is on the dead one. But it's in SharePoint, that's why. I think it's because of the open source and Microsoft in the same tool. It just threw off their entire processing. So I just want to warn you that when you go out to webservicestudio.codeplex.com, last time I checked it, it may have been changed, may have been fixed. Last time I checked it was marked as a dead project, not being maintained anymore, right? That's not accurate. It is a developer tool. It's designed for a developer who wants to test the web service they are developing. Now, the nice part about that is if they're testing it, we can test it, right? We can use the same exact tool. It acts as a web service client. And it works very well against Microsoft developed, Microsoft framework developed web services, right? It does not have any security tests built in. So you're gonna have to use something like FuzzDB that we talked about yesterday to provide you with a list of those XPath injections and different attacks and stuff like that and feed those in to Web Service Studio, right? But and then you have to evaluate the responses manually. It does not do any analysis of what it found. Make sense? So I already talked about all this. It's flexible, right? It's a development tool. You as the security person have to put in the effort of analyzing what it does. Make sense? Which brings us to SOAP UI.